Do you like true crime?
How about cryptids?
Maybe a little conspiracy?
Or the occasional cult?
We've got a podcast for you. I'm Emily.
And I'm Danielle, and we're the hosts of Midwest Madness.
We talk about crime, cults, cryptids, and conspiracies in the Midwest. Check us out every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at MW Madness Podcast or on Facebook at Midwest Madness Podcast.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hey there, guys and ghouls.
You're tuned into your broadcast from the Belfry. I did not think of anything funny to say. A unprepared podcast for the morbidly curious.
My name is Sanjay. I'm unprepared very frequently, and across the internet in a land far, far away is Georgia. George, how you doing today?
Let me tell you, it's been rainy all day.
Moist.
Had the windows open because it's not too cold.
It's a perfect spring day. It's like May 13th? May 6th?
It's definitely May 25th.
Is it May 25th?
Yes.
I was close. Why did you both look at me that way? Day? I was close.
Because it's almost April. It's less than a month till your birthday.
No, I said May, not March. It's a Mean Girls reference. It's the perfect date.
Oh, no, that's October 3rd.
Is
it? October 3rd?
October 3rd is the Mean Girls reference.
Mm-hmm.
April 25th is the reference from Miss Congeniality about the perfect date.
Really?
It's April 25th?
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was not that, because that's my dad's birthday. I feel like I should have remembered that.
It's April 25th.
Welcome to Broadcast from the Belfry, a We Don't Know What the Fuck a Calendar Is podcast for the morbidly curious. Thank you,
Hope. Anyway, so... It's been a great day, weather-wise. I wash all my blankies, so they all smell nice and laundry detergent-y. Also, I got my stimulus check today, so the government thinks I am completely flush with cash, probably, so... Oh, and Luna just showed up. So, yeah, all in all, good day.
Hell yeah, dude. You heard the voice. In a closer part of the internet is Hope, doing the fact-checking, social medias, ones and twos. Hope, what is good?
Well, I just got advertised that Build-A-Bear, which I've never had, is selling a Baby Yoda, and I'm tempted.
There's not a Build-A-Bear.
Build a Baby Yoda.
What?
Build a Baby Yoda. Build a Baby Yoda.
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
No, it doesn't.
Instead of Bab, it'd be like Baby. Yeah.
Yeah, literally.
Can buy them online, and they have free shipping.
Ooh, no, do that. No, but then you can't kiss the heart and put it inside of them, you know. That's the appeal.
There's an option for it not to be sewed up, so you can do that.
I thought you were going to say there's an option for someone else to kiss it.
I thought that's what you were going
to
say.
Just like, do you want, like, to say to Grogu, I love you, I hope you have a good night, or do you want Cletus to be like, I hope you have a good sleep, Baby Yoda, and just, like... And then put it in there.
Yikes.
I'd pay extra for Cletus.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
This is no one ever asks. Yeah, no one ever asks you this. How are you today?
Generally bad. I'm good. Okay today, though. That's
same
nice.
Same old.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Just, you know, the new, like, variant branches of depression. It's a different day.
Yep. You just have to, 4 days. You know. It's gotta be contextual.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I'm super excited. A 4 day weekend for mental health reasons and for housing reasons and for a shoot. So I'm super excited.
Nice.
Yeah. They call me Mr. Kansas Wide because I travel Kansas.
Great.
Yep. They don't call me
Pitbull. You can be Mr.
Dachshund.
You can be a Mr. Midwest-wide when you make that trip to come visit us out here.
I also listen to a lot of Midwest emo, so you could probably do that now, actually.
Hi, BB. Okay, I have three announcements real quick.
Announcements.
One, I feel like we should apologize for last week's audio. That was my bad because I did not check and everything recorded from my headset microphone, and that's why it's terrible.
It's not that bad, but it's not good, and I'm glad it's your fault, not mine. So, yeah,
well, and, like, sorry, also, it's, everyone. right here, so it was, like, hitting my shirt all the time, and, like...
That's what that sound was. Okay.
Yeah.
No,
that's why it's so bad.
Yeah, it's, like, a tapping. It's, like, you have a bunch of, tiny people, you know, just, like, very... like the borrowers, just like tiny people, just like playing the bongos on your mic the whole time.
Yeah, and especially because my face is like
round,
normally kind of this way because that's where my mic is, which is the opposite side of what side my headset mic is on. So it's all good. Everything's good. And it took me like a solid, I was almost done editing the episode until I put two and two together as to why it was so bad. So. Second announcement.
Oh, wait.
What? No? What?
All right.
God damn it.
I need to move my mic. Second announcement. I adjusted. I want to make sure the audio is the same-ish.
Second announcement. Well, I don't... Is it still supposed to storm? Or is that rolled over? He's ignoring me. Stuart! Okay. Well, it was supposed to storm, but that was, like, when we were getting set up. So, I was gonna say that if our internet suddenly goes off, that's why. But I think we're through the storm, literally.
Huh.
Third announcement, everyone needs to watch Resident Alien.
What does that... Give some context! What is it?
It's a great show!
I don't trust
you. It's so funny. Have you seen trailers for it?
No.
All you need to know, as someone who hasn't watched it yet, Alan Tudyk is one of the main people.
Oh yeah, I'll watch it. Yeah. That's it.
It's great. He is an alien that has crash landed on Earth, and he goes into this doctor's cabin and kills the doctor, throws his body in a lake, and then like shapeshifts into him. And this is all in the setup. The local doctor gets murdered, and so the cops come and ask. They know this guy's a doctor, so they come and ask him to like do the autopsy and help him out, and then like convince him to become the doctor. But he is like googling things on his phone, like as he's meeting people, he's like googling things on his phone. He googles like terminology all the time, like someone calls him a douchebag and he has to google it to figure out what it means. And he learned English from watching episodes of Law and Order, so he relates everything that happens in real life to Law and Order. And so the whole first episode, anytime something dramatic happens, he just goes clung clung. It's so funny. And his favorite phrase that he learns is, "This is some bullshit." So it's like an awkward English Alan Tudyk voice just going, "This is some bullshit." It's amazing. And I also actually, it does a really good job. It's set in Colorado. And in like a mountain town, and a lot of the supporting characters are Native American, and they do a really good job like making that part of the show and making Native American culture like a thing without making it be a thing, you know, like without making it gimmicky, or it's just like a normal thing because that's normal in the town. So I give it some props in that respect.
Hell yeah, dude. Also, for anyone that doesn't know the name Alan Tudyk, he's Wash from Firefly. He's Sunny the robot from iRobot. He's Hey Hey the chicken from Moana. He's everything. He's great.
He's in A Knight's Tale.
Oh, yeah, that too. He was in A Knight's Tale, like, forever ago.
What am I thinking of? Doesn't he do another robot voice?
Oh, yeah. He's, Fuck. It's K2SO.
Where'd Hope go?
I don't know. We need her right now, though.
Anyway, it's on Peacock. It's I think there's like three or four episodes. I don't know, but
the Peacock app is one of the worst apps I've used in my entire life.
I know. Stu yells every day, "This is the worst app." He also says about trying to rewind anything on Disney. So
that's also a pain in the butt. Can confirm. Yes. I want that audio bite, please. Like, separate it. I just want Stu in the background yelling. You talking about Peacock?
Anyway, what's the name of the robot? Why were you giving us that look? What are we forgetting?
You're forgetting Dodgeball.
Oh, yeah, the Pirate.
He's Steve the Pirate, yeah.
He's Steve the Pirate.
What are we talking about today?
I am super excited. This is gonna be on the shorter end, notes-wise, so take that as you will.
That means Georgia was a lazy sack of shit and didn't do her notes? Wow.
No, you didn't prep? No, I did prep. It just means that there's not a lot of information about this particular subject, but it's cool enough that I'm gonna cover it anyway because it's really cool.
Hell yeah, dude.
So,
I'm stoked.
I'm gonna tell you about a lady named Frances Glessner Lee. Does that sound familiar? Have you ever heard of that?
I have a friend named Frances, and they're really cool. They got a tattoo recently. Don't know if that's them. Probably not. Fran's like 28. I assume your person's dead, so.
Yep, nope. Definitely. She was born in 1878,
Hope is very excited. Like, she's sweaty. Can you hear that to your listener?
Did you just do a quick Google?
Yes, because I knew the name and I couldn't remember why I knew the name. And I'm so excited.
I told you you'd like this episode. So, okay. She was born in 1878 in Chicago to a fairly wealthy family. Their money came from the International Harvester Company, which did like manufacturing. And her father also collected fancy, expensive furniture. Their home is now a museum in Chicago. I'm surprised I haven't been there, especially when I studied architecture and we took field trips to Chicago all the time, but I haven't. It's probably going to go on my to-visit list, though. That's the John J. Glessner House Museum. But he also sounds like a dick. So Frances and her brother were homeschooled, and then he was able to go to Harvard. But, you know, she was a woman, so she doesn't need education. Her dad kind of made her marry a lawyer when she was 19, but that eventually ended up in divorce. And in the 30s, she inherited her family fortune, and following a career in legal medicine, she was able to afford to follow her own interests in detective work. And so some of her accomplishments include helping to establish the Department of Legal Medicine at Harvard, which was the first of its kind. And she also endowed the McGrath Library of Legal Medicine along with that. But the part that we're really interested in, she is known as the mother of forensic science for a very specific and awesome reason.
Did she give birth to a person that she named forensic science?
No.
Okay, it'd be fun. It'd be a meme. I would do that.
Wait, are you drinking anything?
Oh, yeah. Dude, yeah. So I'm drinking a cocktail that was made for me by one Georgia Ann Abrams. What's your middle name?
Yeah. Is it Ann? No. Lee? It's on Facebook. You see it all the time when I send a huge amount of messages Craig. For a group chat.
Georgia
it's
Craig.
Three letters.
So, Amy?
No.
Ray?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Okay, cool. Yeah, so Miss Georgia Ray Abrams, for Christmas time, made me a homemade limoncello cocktail that should be served over ice. I've done that zero times, and I have no alcohol at home and don't want to drink seltzer because I'm real burpy. So, yeah, I'm drinking that right now. Neat.
And I saw, like, the top of the bottle, and I assumed that you had already drank it, because I'm surprised that alcohol lasted that long in your house.
No, yeah, well, it, like, I got through modes.
It gets better over time, yeah.
No, it actually is so much, so it was, like, ethanol-y at the beginning when you gave it to me, and then around Christmas, it was still, like, strong, and now, smooth. And, like, so smooth.
Nice. I think we still have, like, half a bottle in our fridge, so.
I would recommend trying it.
Yeah, it gets sweeter as you and more mellow.
Just like me.
The opposite of me.
Yes.
George's I did
mean,
have a...
For any of my new listeners, George is a mean person. She's not nice.
I have no patience for anything. I am not a nice person. I was drinking an iced chai, but I mostly drank it all already. Shout out to Anna. and Tyler for taking her one yesterday.
Yes, our fans Number of the podcast. Best friends. We love them. Thank you, Tyler and Anna, for being my heart, my soul, my Dwayne, my Rock, my Johnson. Just wonderful people. Beautiful kids.
So anyway, back to Frances and her interest in detective stuff. Apparently she was pretty into Sherlock Holmes stories, so that probably was an influence in some of her decisions, but pretty much most of her potential career path started when she met a classmate of her brother's named George Burgess McGrath, who was studying at Harvard Medical, and he focused on the investigations surrounding death, pathology, as we might call it these days. And he ended up becoming Boston's chief medical examiner, and he and Frances started lobbying that coroners should be replaced with medical professionals, which, for the record, is still not a thing in most places except cities.
I mean, so you can just be, like, a guy?
Yeah, you can just be a coroner.
I feel like you should have, like, maybe in the middle somewhere, because you have to have training, but also, so, like, the stomach.
To be fair, a lot of coroners usually start out as cops or EMTs or something, but you still don't have, but still doesn't give you the training you need to be a pathologist. And that's not always the case. You know, you can be any, coroners are elected officials. It doesn't matter what your job is. You can be a coroner. And it's obviously political if you are convincing people to vote for you to be a coroner. And I feel like that is problematic, especially if you're investigating crimes. Emmys obviously have a medical background, and Emmys, main difference is that Emmys determine cause of death from a medical standpoint. Like, they do the autopsy, they determine the cause of death from a medical perspective. Coroners rely on, like, the field work, the investigation, the crime scene, the evidence, to make their conclusion about cause of death. So it's problematic, for sure. Mm-hmm. One of the other endowments that Frances made was for the Harvard Associates in Police Science, which is a national organization for forensic science. And then within that, there's a division that's now called the Frances Glessner Lee Homicide School. Like, she was hugely influential in the field. This lady was remember, this all started in the 30s, so this is a time when forensic techniques were still pretty limited. Training for investigators was pretty non-existent. To put things, like, into a timeline, I said that she was born in 1878, and if you remember from, like, a year ago when we talked about Jack the Ripper, I said that the first crime scene photo was taken from one of the last Ripper crime scene, and that was in 1888, so, like, she was already alive when the very first crime scene photo was taken. Damn. And that's kind of, like, the forensic world that she is thriving in at the moment. Evidence was overlooked, mishandled, crime scenes were contaminated all the time. And this is something that she decided that she was passionate about resolving. So the thing she is most well known for is a series she did during the 40s called The Nutshell Studies of Unexplained Death. And she designed and constructed 20 dollhouse dioramas of different death scenes that she put together using facts from various cases, murders, suicides, and accidental deaths. All like, she would take elements from real cases, combine them into a new case that was super challenging. And then she would present them at these conferences to be studied by detectives as a training technique. They're all to a scale of 1 inch to a foot, and each one costs between $3,000 to $4,500 to make. What? They were so ridiculously detailed. So she would make tiny little accurate calendars with the correct dates marked inside them. They would have tiny working mouse traps. The windows and doors and lights were all functioning. She would roll tiny little hand-rolled cigarettes and burn the ends of them. She would write these teeny tiny little notes or letters. She used old fabric to make the clothes be realistically worn. She would recreate tiny bullet holes at accurate angles, and she would recreate blood spatter patterns accurately. And even the doll she made showed accurate signs of decomp, like discoloration and bloating, depending upon like how the crime scene was first reported. And then she would have a crime scene report that she also wrote next to each diorama. Like, there'd be a couple eyewitness accounts, you know, presented next to it so that the person who was studying them had the eyewitness, and then they had the crime scene, and they had to, like, figure out what happened. And so she chose the name to follow their purpose, Nutshell Studies, which she described as training homicide investigators to, quote, convict the guilty, clear the innocent, and find the truth in a nutshell.
Nice. That's pretty cool. That's solid.
Yeah. And the models would have been presented at the semi-annual training conferences held for detectives and prosecutors and, like, anyone in the field, really. And it was a week-long event, and she revealed the diorama, and they were given an hour and a half to study each one and collect all the necessary evidence from the crime scene. She was basically testing their attention to detail and their ability to determine whether something is evidence and things that are out of place, things that seem weird, stuff like that. And then I found this really cool article in the Smithsonian that describes her project as a way for a woman to use traditionally feminine crafts to advance the male-dominated field of police investigation and to establish herself as one of its leading voices. And one of the other cool things that she did was she purposefully used cases that highlight your invisible victims, like victims of domestic abuse, prostitutes, poor people, people on the edges of society whose deaths were deemed not as important, as a way to highlight the problem, because she believed that truth and justice were for everyone, and she knew that some of those cases would be approached with prejudice on behalf of the investigator, and she wanted to train them out of that. It's a pretty good article, and I will probably link it in the show notes because it's really cool.
Yeah, do that. Like, Hope also just sends, yeah, like, some of the pictures of, like, her scenes, and they are painfully detailed. Like, holy crap. Yeah. And it also was really cool that she was like, I'm gonna, very subtly, just a little dash of treat people like people. Like, you're not gonna realize, yeah, that's what's going on, but it's happening.
Here's some feminism with a splash of equality for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
In 1943, she was made an honorary captain of the New Hampshire State Police, where she was living, and that made her the very first female police chief, and therefore the first female in the International Association of the Chiefs of Police.
Holy shit.
So she's just smashing glass ceilings left and right. The first model she made was way earlier than the rest. I'll tell you all the names of them because it'll give you an idea of what they portray. But the first one she made was in 1896. So she's only 18 at the time. And it's called The Dark Bathroom. And then fast forward, the rest were made 1937 to 1949. And if you think about the detail in these and the fact that she made 20 of them in 12 years, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is the three-room dwelling. Then we have the barn, the striped bedroom, the living room, the pink bathroom, the log cabin, the burned cabin, the blue bedroom, the kitchen, the red bedroom, saloon and jail, woodman's shack, garage, parsonage and parlor, attic, sitting room and woodshed, two-story porch, and then the unpapered bedroom. And there was another one called Two Rooms, but it was lost or destroyed in the 60s.
Lost or destroyed? Like, it could,
yeah,
be.
Yeah, no one knows what happened to it.
Okay, I was like, that's
it
really
long. It just did not make it through the 60s, yeah. The one called Sitting Room and Woodshed was also thought to be lost, but it was found in 2003. So, like, the 18 have been on display at the Smithsonian American Art Museum in D.C. in, like, 2017, 2018. And then the Sitting Room and Woodshed is, I think, in New Hampshire still, and they have yet to reunite it with the others. And these are still used for training today. Like, they still make people study them. That's how groundbreaking and, like, useful they are. They live at the Maryland Medical Examiner's office in Baltimore. And I went on the website because I was like, if I go to Baltimore, can I go in and see them? But I did not see anything about that, so probably not, unfortunately.
I mean,
and because they're still being used,
it's breaking.
I mean, I guess you can just go in and be like, hey, can I see those dioramas?
Yeah,
the worst they can do is say no.
Yeah, or they'll be like, all right, nerd, cool. Hey, everyone, let's let the nerd in.
I'd be like, cool, thanks. Yeah, because they're still used, there are no public solutions to give away the details, but you can see them on, I found a link also through the Smithsonian article where you can use VR on your phone to like look around some of them. Whoa. So that's pretty cool. And then there's also a website called Death and Diorama that I'll also link to. You can click on, there's like three or four of them to choose from, and you can click on them and it gives you the witness statement, and then it has like different bits of evidence marked just to like give you an example of the kind of things that, you know, they're used to point out. So I figured I'd tell you about the first one, and you can check out the others if you want to. So the first one on there is called Kitchen, which is, it's dated. The eyewitness report is dated April 11th, 1944. And the deceased is listed as Robin Barnes, a housewife, and the witness is her husband, Fred. And the eyewitness report says that Fred says, I went downstairs at 4 o'clock to run an errand for my wife. After about an hour and a half, I came back and found the outside door to the kitchen locked. It was propped open when I left. I knocked and called, but got no answer. I tried the front door, but it was also locked. I went to the kitchen window, which was closed and locked. I looked in and saw her lying on the floor. I called the police, who forced the kitchen door open. And then it shows a picture of the diorama with the victim lying on the floor next to the refrigerator, which has been left open. And the oven door is also left open, and it looks like she was otherwise in the middle of, like, cooking dinner or baking or something. And so you can scroll over the image and the numbers. Like, if you hover over the numbers, they kind of detail the kind of thing that you should be looking for. So this one says, you know, number one, the body needs to be checked for any signs of trauma to determine if it was homicide or suicide, and there doesn't seem to be any blood anywhere. It also points out that the temperature of the open fridge can help determine time of death. And it shows that the oven is open with all the gas jets still on. And that could be an explanation for her face looking flushed if she died like by asphyxiation from the gas, like carbon monoxide.
Mm-hmm.
And then because the diorama also shows that all of the doors have been stuffed with newspaper and locked from the inside, which is another thing you can associate with the monoxide. And Fred also mentioned that the window is locked, though the diorama also features a tablecloth that is like askew on the table. And it points out that the rest of the kitchen is otherwise neat. So why would this like tablecloth be left messy intentionally? Like that's uncharacteristic of the house. So maybe a killer could have left through the window. And it also makes you question whether someone who is obviously in the middle of doing something would just completely stop in the middle of it to kill themselves. And then finally, it points out some of the things that could be used for weapons and should be tested for DNA. So it's kind of like a locked room mystery.
Mm-hmm. Are there answers to these? Like, did she build the, or like create them with a specific like narrative in mind? And then added like inconsistencies outside of that, or
she made a like an answer key for it, but that's why I said earlier that because they're still used, those aren't like published anywhere.
Okay,
but she did create an answer key for them. That's like most of my notes. There's a couple pop culture things, like there's an episode of NCIS where this comes up, and it's the inspiration for the miniature killer in CSI. I know it from an episode of Father Brown with a very similar character, which I think is how I learned of her in the first place. And then there's a couple of documentaries that I couldn't find anywhere, but I wanted to watch. There's one called The Nutshell Studies of Dolls and Murder, and one called Murder in a Nutshell.
Nice. I just like the, yeah. the pun. It's like, it just brings it home, you know? That's so cool.
Yeah, she was a cool lady.
May she rest in peace, unless she's still alive.
Yeah.
112.
Actually, definitely no, 104? Older than that. 1878.
Oh, 78. Shit. Okay, yeah, yeah. No. Oh, yeah, she's like 55, 65. She's young.
Yep.
Hey, do you want to learn something new?
Yeah.
Something that you may not know about me, even though we've been friends for a while. I McFucking hate koalas. I was scared of them for like the first half of my life. They are not cool dudes. So for today's Sanjay segment thing, we talking about koalas.
Okay.
All right, so...
Disappointed in you.
Why?
I don't know, because I really like koala bears.
Oh, well, get ready to not, maybe. We'll see.
Nothing you say will change my mind.
That's fair. I can't write a list of reasons for you to hate them if you can't read. You know, like, that's... It's just a thing. So we're doing this two truths and a lie style. We will have a round of little statements, little statementitos, a little bit more info, and then you will choose which one is the lie.
I sure will.
You're not like X and O anymore. You're X and one.
I know. It's fine.
I'm just saying. I'm not mad about it.
I did really bad on Jeopardy today, so maybe I shouldn't be so confident.
Alright, so let's start at the top. First, koalas don't have the brain capacity to learn anything new.
Okay.
Two, the reason that koalas hug things is to exfoliate their skin.
Okay.
And three, I really need to organize my notes better. Holy shit. This is just me saying I don't like you over and over and over again. That's it. I'm the one that can't read. Oh, and... Koalas have been plagued by chlamydia for years.
Okay, I'm pretty sure I've heard that before.
So it is one.
Are you expanding your facts now? Oh, you're yeah. still waiting for me to make my initial...
Yeah.
Okay. I think for the time being, I think the first one is a lie.
Okay, fair. So koalas can't learn anything new. They have very smooth brains, very few wrinkles. They literally don't have the capacity to learn anything. Two.
Okay.
Koalas are... why can't I read? Okay, there we go. Cool. So
because koalas, you're a koala.
Yep. Koalas will move up and down the length of a tree to rub some of their dead skin off and make sure that their coats are nice when it starts to get sweaty.
That sounds great.
That's what you do pretty much, so...
Yeah, honestly. That's what Stu does. Except he does that in the corner of the wall.
And three, the chlamydia that koalas get is slightly worse than that of humans. It can cause blindness and is also called dirty tail.
Interesting. I mean, I know they're real dumb, so... I kind of feel like number... I am concerned because of what happened last week, where the article used the term purveyor incorrectly. So I am concerned that I want to say number one is wrong, because I know they're real dumb. But I also am hesitant to say that they absolutely cannot learn anything new. Does that make sense?
Nope, that sounds like excuses to me.
Okay, I'm gonna go with two then.
Is that your finale answer?
I guess.
You are correct. So the reason that koalas actually hug onto trees is to regulate body temperature when it gets real sweaty. It is not to exfoliate. That's so it's not cute. To take care of those little coats. No, they're gonna look so cute and cute. Misleadingly nice no matter what. But koalas are big... fucking stupid. They do have exceedingly smooth brains. with very little folds. The reins are 60% of the size of what you would expect from an animal of that size, which is fair, you know, little dumb little savages. And they do have chlamydia. That's just it. Really fucks them up.
I knew that one. I've heard that before.
I think you were 3-1? 2-1?
3-1.
Yeah, your record's, it's good. You've got, and you have a 75% success rate, which is an American
A. I told you! Wouldn't that be 75%? Because 3/4 is 75?
Yeah, no, that's what I said. A 75%. Oh. That's an American
A. I definitely heard you say 70%.
Oh, no, 75. Yeah, an American A. But yeah, other than that, your koalas also have red eyes. They screech. They can run, I think? That can't be right. The number in my head is 20 miles per hour, but that's, like, fucking absurd.
I just relate a lot to koala bears, so... Except for the chlamydia part.
It's too late. You can't take it back now. You heard it here first, guys.
Georgia's I also have eyes like a demon, and I screech a lot.
So I was wrong. Koalas can't run 20 miles an hour. They can run 32 miles per hour.
Oh, I can't do that either.
If frightened, they can leap up a tree in 2-meter bounds. That is over 6 feet. That is my height. It's exactly 6 feet.
Are they... It's not exactly 6
feet. It's a little over.
Approximately 6 feet.
Yeah.
Are they, like, dwarves or elves, though?
Dwarves. I refuse to affiliate anything I care about with koalas. They're dumb. They're strong. That's it. That's a dwarf, man.
You know how Gimli says, you know, we dwarves are wasted over long distance, but they're natural sprinters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that, actually.
So, are they dwarves or elves?
They're dwarves. Yeah, they're sprinting.
Okay, then I still feel like I can relate to koalas on several levels.
Yep, they also sleep so much because they eat food that has no nutritional value at all.
Same!
Like, they have to sleep, like, 22 hours a day because they get so little nutrients from the eucalyptus, which I think there's, like, between, like, 600 and 900, like, variations of eucalyptus. Koalas can only eat, like, 50 of them, but, like, the average koala only eats, like, 3. Because they're so spread out across the country. So they have to supplement their diet with dirt. Literally dirt. Because there's nothing else. And they're just like, well, it's here. Shovel that in.
I sleep like 22 hours a day. And I get no nutritional value from all of the tea and wine and chocolate that I eat. So,
How much of it do you have to eat, though? And how much of it do you drink? Because apparently they eat pounds, like pounds of eucalyptus.
Remember what I keep saying, I lost all that weight simply because I stopped binge drinking, kind of.
Yeah, you're just Andy, that's it. Like, Andy, how'd you lose so much weight? Stop drinking beer. No, but really, yeah. Like, what else did you do? Stop drinking beer.
Nothing.
Lost 100
Literally
pounds.
Nothing.
Well, I think that's all I got. No, if you were to create a crime scene, or recreate a crime scene, creating a crime scene, easy. Recreating it, not so easy. What would you use as your median? What would you use? This is also, like, not realistic. This, you have anything, any technology that has or, like, ever will exist, and you can do this. Like, what do you want to do?
Well, I have several thoughts. Neither of them are that good right now. My first thought was my grandma made these, like, eggshell. They're, like, Christmas ornaments, and they're little dioramas inside eggshells, and you, like, drain the egg out, and you cut a little window, and you, like, paint them, and you put tiny little figurine stuff inside of them. However, I've tried to recreate some of those. Like, we had 12 originally. And I think all of them but, like, 2 are broken since I've my childhood. And my first thought would be, oh, I can make little murder egg ornaments. That'd be cute. But I tried to recreate them, and they were awful and a pain in the ass, and I hate them, and I never want to do it again. So that's out the window. My second thought is to have some, like, Tony Stark computer where you can, like, zoom in, switch things around, input new data to switch it up some more, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, that's one of the coolest things about that, like, or those movies. Just the Marvel, like, entity as a whole is whenever Tony's like, I guess I'll get down to business. And he, what movie is it where he, like, puts his hand, like, kind of through something, like, and he has a kind of wristband, and he pulls it, like, all the way up, and he's, like, manipulating the scene. I think it's Ultron?
He does that in the original Avengers.
It is OG Avengers?
I believe so. Georgia, you watched them the most recently.
Yeah, I could not tell you.
It's a small thing. It's just so fucking sick to me every time. I'm just like, oh, this is insane.
Okay, but like, no. If you had a dreamatorium type room, but you also had the ability to use more than your imagination to fill it with some, like, you know, projected kind of VR stuff, and you could actually put your in the crime scene kind of the way that What's-His-Nuts does on Hannibal, you know, how he, like, puts himself in the crime scene and sees how it plays out around him. But you don't have to be a psychopath to do that like he is.
He's not a psychopath.
He's a sociopath. It's fine.
I had to think about it. I was like, I think this is the delineating line.
He's a sociopath.
He's a sociopath.
I don't even know if he's a sociopath. I think he just...
He's not self-motivated enough, right?
I think he's just mentally unstable, and then Hannibal exploits that and does the drug stuff and the time thing and the...
So I guess eventually he's a psychopath, but in the beginning he's just a little hurt. Will Graham, that's his name. So I was actually thinking something kind of like you initially about, like, if you could craft a really tiny scene and then just, like, shrink ray yourself, that would just be it. Like, that'd be the coolest thing. So just like painting an egg.
So you're going, you could go Tony Stark, but you're gonna go Hank Pym.
Exactly. Just gotta get tiny. I love how tiny a suit is, too. So you could have a tiny suit. So
it's real cute.
That was my first thought. Second thought, which was directly Marvel, was, like, the Wakanda sand that they use for everything. So, like, that they can... I think they have, like, transmitters they wear, and that's how they control the sand. So, yeah, just doing that, like, to quote the main character on Big Hero 6, your imagination's your limit. Guys, thank you for listening to Broadcast from the Belfry. If you work with me, thanks for listening to this podcast. I appreciate you. I hope you had fun. We've got a lot of other content, like 55 more episodes aside from this one. If you liked what you heard today, give us a like, a subscribe, a thumb up, anything. It helps with an algorithm that I don't understand. But you can also contact us at broadcastfromthebelfry@gmail.com or just search Broadcast from the Belfry on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Thank you to Marshall for making our intro. It's super fancy. We love you. If you want a fancy intro or just fancy music, something to walk to, something to strut to, something to play when you pick up your dog's poop, we'll have that in the description. Go drop him a line. He's real nice. Thank you to Tyler and Anna. Love of our lives. Loves is of our lives is. I think that's all I got. Do you have any other announcements, Georgia?
Is it raining?
I don't think that's going to be relevant when this episode posts. I really don't.
It sounded really loud outside.
It might be. Okay, well, that was a weird announcement. Oh, it's
the wind. The wind is so loud.
It's the wind. What do we say?
The wine.
What do we say to the kind... nutshell people that listen to this podcast?
Thanks for listening and stay spooky.
Heavily wrinkled brains, sluts.